The following program is brought to you by your friends at TheForce.net.
Oh, Maxi bit the Force.
And RebelScum.com.
You Rebel Scum.
The galaxy is listening.
Who need that? No, no, no. Alawa. Who need that?
Welcome to the Forcecast, your weekly dose of Star Wars news and much more.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it.
All systems have been alerted to your presence, sir.
Check it out, Corporal.
Roger, roger.
Now your hosts of the Forcecast, Jason and Pete.
We would be honored if you would join us.
Oh, dear God. It's always an adventure.
Yes, it is.
I'm still trying to eat.
Been a long day.
Oh, it's gonna be an even longer night, I think.
Welcome to the Forcecast.
Woo!
Yeah, we had a little bit of a false start. I forgot to hit the all-important record button. There's so many buttons that I have to press now. More buttons. That's all I need. More buttons. Greetings and yes, welcome to the Forcecast, the official podcast of TheForce.net and RebelScum.com. We are happy to be with you this week's episode for August 17th, 2007. And my name is Jason, and with me always my best buddy, Pete.
Happy to ride in shotgun.
And if you're just joining us, we're actually trying something new this week. We guess we really started it last week, but it's
new every week,
yeah.
Whether we like it or not.
That's right. We're doing the show live now on TalkShoe. So through TalkShoe, the magic of TalkShoe.com, it's getting there.
It's a work in progress, but
yeah,
progress it is.
That's right. And actually, so if you are listening live, and it looks like there's a selection of you, and you have something that you want to say, if you have a question or a comment, I'm sure all of you are Force.net and RebelScum.com readers. You know what we're going to be talking about this week. It's no big secret. So go ahead and get yourself in the queue to call. If you're listening live and you just want to phone in, you can do that by calling area code 724-444-7444. Now, is it me or was that the phone number for Coffee Talk? You remember that old bit?
Oh, I'm all for
444-4444. Yeah, and honestly, it's 724-444-7444. You can call from any phone, your landline, your cell phone, and then they'll ask you for the TalkCast ID number, and that's going to be the same every week, 46670. But you do have to be a membered or a registered member of TalkShoe to get in on this. And there's, I mean, you can participate a lot of different ways. You can just listen, which is kind of cool. You get the show early and live. Or you can chat with other listeners. Or you can ask a question, or you can do all three. I mean, it's up to you. So
we're moving towards fully interactive.
Really?
Yes.
Really fully interactive.
Yes. Eventually, we'll come to your house.
Oh my gosh! Can you imagine? Can you imagine? We'll do birthday parties. We'll start doing like Star Wars birthday parties. Right. Then we will get the cease and desist letter. I'm sure.
Sad birthday parties like Ghostbusters 2. I saw Ernie Hudson this weekend, by the way.
Did you real? Oh, that's right. You went to the Fangoria.
Yeah, well, it was horrifying weekend, and Ernie was there looking pretty much like Ernie.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did he look just like he did in Ghostbusters?
He did. With a little gray on his sideburns, it was the same guy.
That's all. As I'm chewing. You notice this? I'm chewing.
It's been a long time. Yes, thank you. It's like, you know, having a phone conversation with my mother, who insists on eating every time that I am on the phone. Like, but something crunchy, which is ridiculous. Anyway, so,
we could
do birthday
weekend.
Parties. We could do a birthday party for one of the, one of our favorite Star Wars actors, that being Oliver Ford Davies.
Oh.
Also known as
beautiful
C.O.
segue.
Bibble.
C.O. Bibble. Yes. Happy birthday, C.O. Bibble, Oliver Davies. What is he, 68?
It's unthinkable that
it's
I'm 68.
It's unthinkable. It's outrageous. It's unthinkable.
It was very hard to distinguish who it was.
I have to hear it more than once. Yes.
that after all these years, I'm still constipated.
Yes, it's the clench the buttocks form of acting.
Oh, you know that guy is from the school of projecting it to the last row.
Yes.
Of, you know, the old Vic, as it were.
But, you know, the funny thing is that when you watch the commentaries and every time he comes on, everybody goes, oh, this is one of our favorite actors. I mean, they love this guy.
Yeah, well, he must be great. Yeah, he's one of those, you know, he's one of those old school kind of actors. I'm sure you can tell. So happy birthday, Oliver Ford Davies.
Yes.
Our resident CO Bibble. That's funny because that was always been an inside joke since you and I started hanging out, is just how ridiculous he is.
Extraordinarily dramatic it is at that point.
Right.
That after all these years.
Oh, man. Well, let's see. What else have we got going on? We've had a couple of... Jimmy Mack has been really, really busy with these microcasts. We had the wrap of the San Diego Comic Con, thanks to the Suck Lord, who did not suck.
No.
He was fantastic.
Yes.
Great interviews. So make sure you, if you haven't checked that one out, and we've got the numbers, we know... We know you haven't downloaded that one
right.
yet.
If you're one of those people who just listens to the main show and skips a lot of the microcast, if it's something special, a special report like Comic-Con or Wizard World, make sure you tune in because usually there's something great in there. And that has been the case in both the Comic-Con interviews that the Sucklord did and the interviews that Jimmy Mack had. In fact, Jimmy Mack's interview with Doug Wangler, who is the model, the male model for Quinlan Vos,
right,
actually got us a scoop over Dan Curto. Can you possibly believe this?
You were telling me this as I was getting to the studios very late and hurried. And no, it's unbelievable. And as a matter of fact,
it's outrageous. It's unthinkable
that anyone could scoop Dan Curto, let alone Quinlan Vos.
Yes. Well,
what was the scoop?
I'm torn on whether I want to give it away. I kind of want to make them listen to the microcast. Well, all the people who are on here and that have listened to, you know, to go back. But anyway, the scoop was that Doug Wangler, who's the male model for Quinlan Vos, is also going to be the inspiration behind Antares Draco, who is one of the Imperial Knights from the Star Wars Legacy comic series.
Yeah, he is.
And he will be included in a comic pack coming out next year. Now, what I won't ruin for you is who is going to be in the comic pack with him. So you'll have to listen to Jimmy's microcast and his interview with Doug in order to get the full information on who's going to be in there with him. But very cool that Jimmy was out there to get that. And it's a great interview to listen to Doug because he is really a big fan.
He is great. And we've had requests in the past since we started this show back in September to have him on.
Yeah.
And, you know, it really wasn't until after we had... now I'm blanking. We had the other model, the one that plays
Shannon
Mara
McRandall.
Jade. Shannon McRandall. We had Shannon on, who's the model inspiration for Mara Jade. And until we interviewed her, I kind of thought, what do they really have to say? They put on a costume, they stand, they get their photos. But it's their convention warriors.
Right.
And so they have a lot of great stories.
And Doug, even more so, is a fan. And, you know, he talked about how he was just, kind of fit the mold. And I thought, you know, I wonder if they need any male models for future characters, somebody who's slightly pudgy, not so tall, kind of non-distinct. I know a guy that fits that profile.
Yeah, well,
willing to do the convention circuit.
Because you're there anyway,
right,
so you might as well
there.
Be getting paid.
But check out Jimmy's microcast. He's got a great interview.
And the one with Wizard World and San Diego Comic Con, they're both
yes.
up.
But he's got a great interview with Mary Oyaya. I just love saying that name. She seems like a very sweet and very cool lady.
No.
Talks about
what?
She talks about how she loves extreme sports and loves doing conventions,
yeah.
And of course loves the Force.net and the Forcecast, which is just completely awesome.
Well, and I would be remiss if we talked about Wizard World without
this is so wizardy.
Being that is Jimmy Mack's favorite character.
Yeah.
It's really bizarre. Don't ask.
He's just one of those kids that...
Don't ask, don't tell.
You know, you wish an adult would grab him and throw him out of the scene.
Under a bantha.
Yes.
Anyway.
That would be wizard.
Yeah, you know what? I kind of always wished in the prequels that you'd see Anakin grow up and go back to Tatooine and kind of
Right.
Beat the crap out of Kidster.
And
never going to run, huh? I'll show you never going to run.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
Keep dreaming, Annie.
Dream about this, punk.
Sorry. Oh, man. Hey, we wanted to give a shout out to our buddy Jeff Roney of Roney's Own Productions. You can check him out at roneyzone.com. He's also the creative force behind Tatooine TV, which was some great Star Wars audio parodies. And it is ending its run, and he's going to be doing a live show, I believe, here on TalkShoe on August 19th. So that's coming up very soon. So send Jeff, if you've been a listener of Tatooine TV, make sure you send him a note and wish him the best. I mean, he's not going away, but Tatooine TV is wrapping up. And anybody who's contributed to the body of work that is Star Wars Fan Audio, they're a friend of ours. So definitely we thank Jeff, and he's been really instrumental and great in helping us set up the live Forcecast. So again, if you're just joining us now, you can call us at 724-444-7444. TalkCast ID is 46670, and then you'll need to register on TalkShoe.com in order to get through. If you are listening to this show after it's live, you can leave us a voicemail at 330-871-4TFN. That has not changed. Or, you know, it doesn't matter if you're listening live or on tape delay. You can always email us at podcast@theforce.net. Pete, you've got the email up, so if somebody emails saying, why does it sound so crappy?
I am alert and ready.
You can tell that.
Just shut up and listen.
We're doing the best we can. We know.
I'm trying.
You know, TalkShoe's like any other of these startups. They're going to get better with time.
Yeah.
You know, Skype is
leaps and bounds ahead of where it was, and we started using that pretty much off the bat. So
here it's coming to the iPhone.
It is.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
It's kind of interesting.
You kind of bypass your minutes plan.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. All right. Well, we started this last week, and we can't guarantee we're going to have one every week.
But we're going to try.
We're going to die trying. This is one that it just I can't pass up. Billy Dee, the clip of the week. From Night Shift.
Oh, when the Saints go marching in. Oh, when the Saints go marching in.
It's you?
What?
It's you. I've been hearing singing in the halls. I thought it was going out of my mind, but it's you. You're a singer.
Well, once upon a time.
Is there nothing the man can't do?
I was going to say, I get the sense that he was once a doctor, a janitor, a singer, an astronaut, smuggler, you know.
You know, after some of the things I've been hearing about astronauts lately, I Billy Dee may have been a credit.
Yes.
No offense to any astronauts that are listening, but
I might have been once in a time. Whoa, back in crazy time. World. But you'll have to tune in next week to figure that out.
What'd you say? You're like, once upon a crazy.
Yeah, once upon a crazy. That's where he
is. That's one I hadn't heard. That's a good one. Anyway, well, we've got headlines coming up. That's about like right now.
I have good news for you, my lord.
That's good news.
Come closer. I have good news.
And we do have good news. Like, how about Clone Wars news? Well, sort of. You know, again, folks, we're desperate sometimes. We're desperate for anything that smells of news. But this is good. If you go over to StarWars.com, they do have a burgeoning, new, growing, expansive, growing by leaps and bounds every day, Clone Wars section on the site. And we mean Clone Wars, the series that's to debut in fall of 2008. I believe that's been confirmed. We're looking at a fall 2008 start. So that's like about a year from now. That's not too bad. Once you get past the 12-month, I mean, I learned that when we were counting down for the prequels. Once you get past that year point, you know, and
time just flies.
It does. It flies. So it'll be here before we know it, and we'll have all kinds of fun things to talk about on the Forcecast. But and we've dropped his name before. So impressed with Dave Filoni.
Absolutely.
Great, great guy and a true fan, so I don't think that the show could be in better hands. So they have a profile of Dave up. This is some new information. Pete, I know that it looks like you already marked up the story here. Some things that you want to point out that
he had said.
Well, it was very interesting reading this just because of the tidbits of things that you can see where his direction is going. And if you don't know, he is the director of the Clone Wars cartoon series. And one of the things that he says is, I always think of what we're making as Star Wars tales. Those are stories explaining moral principle aspects of how the Star Wars characters relate in the Star Wars universe. It's filling in details that the fans kind of wondered about, but it's also telling a story for the mom that doesn't know anything about Star Wars. What a perfect way to introduce a series.
Yeah.
That it appeals to everyone, and it hits all levels of...
Character-driven.
Yep.
Which, let's face it, the prequels were not character-driven. They were very much plot-driven. And, not that there wasn't some good character stuff in there. There was, but this is an opportunity. Of course, you know, we're talking about hours and hours and hours and hours of canvas on which to paint these stories. So that's good. When I read that quote, I was really excited because character studies, and it's natural. I mean, he has a favorite character that's more of a tertiary character, Plo Koon.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, this is the kind of guy that's going to want to do a little more in-depth analysis of these characters.
Right.
And, of course, I'm delighted that they're actually G-canon level characters for the most part, because that's just my wheelhouse. You know?
Right.
And it's really cool. It's
right.
Very cool.
Well, and that's the thing is one thing that they weren't able to do in the films was develop any of these tertiary characters that are on the outside. You know, we have an entire Jedi Council, but is there anything that they do? And he does talk about that, and this is another quote that he had where he says, Plo Koon is a completely obscure Jedi Master who sits in a chair in the Council room and does not have a line of dialogue in three films. But I like his design. I love the background Jedi on the Council, and I think a lot of fans wonder, what are those guys doing? I mean, we see Plo Koon get shot down on Cato Nemoidia, and we see Stas Ali die on Salakumai, so we know they went places and fought in the Clone Wars, but we don't really see that. So now we can take a character like Plo Koon and put him in three episodes and show what he was doing or how he crossed paths with Anakin or Obi-Wan, the clones of the Clone Wars who have often been relegated to background characters in the movie will also come to the forefront with individual personalities.
And you combine that kind of storytelling with the animation style that we've seen in the trailer, and that's, man, does that get me excited.
I watch it usually really at least once a week.
There's only one downside to this whole campaign for me.
Oh, here we go.
I'm sorry, but, and if we ever get our good friend Daryl DePriest on, I want to talk to him. When you see those designs, don't you just think what cool action figures they would make?
I do. And the funny thing about that is that, well, and maybe this is the strategy, but of course, as you know, those animated style characters for the original Clone Wars series are done and gone. Yeah. Not making any more. Try and get one on eBay. They are expensive. The secondary market for those is very expensive, but the thought was they just didn't do very well at retail. Understandable. I know because I saw a lot of them on clearance at Target. But it's
yes, but I mean, as we know about Target, I mean, they've got like a threshold. Like if it doesn't move by noon that day, it's got the red tag on it. It's going out the door. I noticed that with the Order 66 packs that was so fast.
Went, yeah.
And I believe that one of those assortments was a Target exclusive wave, and they just got a ton of Count Dooku's and Anakin's.
Yeah.
And smaller amounts of Obi-Wan and Yoda. I mean, we're kind of off on a tangent, but that's the one disappointment for me. But I'm thinking that clearly Gentle Giant will probably pick up the slack and we'll see some animated statues. I think that's why they're maintaining the animated line.
Sure.
So that could be very cool. Is that all you have to say?
Well,
I think we have no, we don't. I thought we had a caller in the queue. Come on, you guys. I know you're listening and...
Call in. Tell us we're dumb.
You want to get in the queue, so join the queue.
All right, anyway, but another thing that Dave said that really caught my eye is something that really makes me think, okay, we're in good hands. He says, as far as design, I don't like to go too far outside of the films.
I tell the crew all the time that we're not here to change things. We're not here to act like we're here to improve things. Our biggest responsibility is to make the story continue in the way we see it in the films. And I think for most purists and for most people that are excited about this project, that's something that's really going to appeal to them. And from everything we've seen, you know, it's a perfect mold and a perfect mix of the animation style plus realistic style. You know, the and I know some people have been disappointed in that it's not more realistic. But what I think when I hear or when I saw that is, you know, I've seen movies where the animation is done and it's they take a realistic style on it.
Mm-hmm. Like Toy Story.
Like with the family. Toy Story, or there was a...
Meet the Robin. No, that wasn't.
There was a Final Fantasy film that they did that was realistic style. And it did look realistic. But you never get pulled out of the animation feel of it. So the fact that they've gone ahead and embraced that and combined the two, I think is pure genius. And I think that'll help to not make it so important that you pull yourself out of the animation feel, but also so that you can immerse yourself in the story as it's being told.
Well, and he said at C4 that this is not going to be superheroes or super friends that happen to be Jedi Knights. I mean, he said you're not going to see anything in this series that you would not see in a film, which I think is very, very cool.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I minded that in the Cartoon Network version. I didn't. I mean, when Mace Windu was, you know, laying out, you know, thousands of battle droids. Yeah, it didn't bother me because in the context of that style, it made sense.
Right.
It was, you know, that Tartakovsky style. But this would be weird.
Right. Well, and I've always thought of that the Tartakovsky style as, you know, that's the bigger than life, Japanese anime style tales where, you know, it's movies that or stories where the main character takes on millions of people by himself.
Yeah.
And it's stories where, you know, Mace Windu may have taken on 100 battle droids at that point, but by the time the story gets around the galaxy, it is he took on 1 million battle droids by himself and, you know, destroyed 3 starships. And
notice that it was, you know, it was witnessed by that little boy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's all about how the legend began.
Right, and that's the legend there. And then he came up and patted me on the head.
Right. Right.
Because that's
which is
the
very
first
in character
thing I think
for
about,
Mace Windu.
Yeah, right. Of when I'm in a battle is, that kid over there really looks like he needs a pat.
Well, there was one quote on here that made me a little sad.
Uh-oh.
He's talking about George. And Filoni is saying that one day George said, and me, we'll try this. Look, I'm teaching you guys to make Star Wars. And I don't know, there was something into that, like, you know, George isn't getting younger. He's not an old man by any means, but he's in his 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And I get the sense that it's kind of passing the torch in a way, in a way that he is not done with Star Wars that we've seen. And I don't know, I just have this vision in my head of how that meeting might have happened and how George, you know, might have just said that. Look, I'm teaching you guys how to make Star Wars.
Right.
It's like, wow, you know what? With all the complaints and that we have, you know, I would still have to, like, fall down on my knees and, you know, bow a little bit. Mm-hmm. You're right. You're right, George. You're right. So that's cool. So make sure you check that out at StarWars.com. Great interview and profile on Dave Filoni. Now we turn to Frank Oz.
Yes. Master Yoda. I've been expecting you.
Yeah, did you get a little disappointed with this interview? There's a link to it over at theforce.net.
You know, I always start to with Frank Oz because I always expect him to be a little more...
He's Fozzie Bear.
Yeah,
he's to be lovable and fuzzy.
A little more Muppet and a little more...
And a little less cranky old man.
Yeah, exactly. A little less caustic and, you know, it's just a job to me. You know, when he's had an impact on so many important characters in our pop culture, it's amazing that, you know, he just kind of fuses it as a job. And we've talked about that before, you know, how some of these, and I have to say, have this excerpt. I was at that convention. I went to a reading of a novel by Doug Bradley, who played the original Pinhead.
in the Hellraiser movies.
Oh, my. Yeah, I remember him. He gave me lots of nightmares.
Yes. And again, just like Robert Englund, who played Freddy Krueger, couldn't be a nicer guy.
Couldn't the irony.
Be a nicer, funnier guy.
That's cool.
But he was talking about his... He's got a novel called Behind the Mask, which he read some excerpts from. And he talked about embracing that character and people, you know, going up to him and saying he's typecast, you know, as that. And he said, look, I'm lucky to be typecast as that. I'm lucky that I can go anywhere in the world and tell people that I was Pinhead and they instantly know who I am. And it's kind of sad to me that that isn't embraced a little bit more in the Star Wars universe. And his reading was fantastic.
With sure, the principles.
Sure. I mean, you don't want to exploit it or do anything ridiculous on it. But on the same token, embrace that and enjoy. He really enjoys the fans.
Well, with somebody like Frank Oz, and we should probably put this in context with some of the statements that he made in this interview. And this was, I think, over at Ain't It Cool News. They did the interview, and it says, have you ever been to a Star Wars convention? He says, never. I don't do them. I won't do them. That's not my job. I create a character. I don't like to exploit characters. I like to create them. I just tend to do that. I don't do personal appearances or any of that. I've been asked to so many times, and I always say no. And it just sounds like, really, you won't even entertain the idea?
Yeah.
Like, Frank, what is the worst thing in the world... to sit at a table for 4 or 5 hours and have people come up and say to you, you have no idea what your work means to me, what that character meant to me. It's, one that comes to mind is Dan Madsen, former president of the fan club. This wonderful story. You know, Dan is a little person, and so, I mean, he's had his share of bumps in his life. A remarkably great person. But he tells this story about when he first saw Star Wars, and I believe it was a cousin that after he had some surgeries and loaded him up in the car and took him to see the movie. And then later when he saw Yoda, he saw how you can be a really strong character and, you know, and size doesn't matter. And what a beautiful story that is that he might like to share with Frank Oz.
Right.
And it just, I don't know, he just seems like the Grinch that stole Christmas to me a little bit.
Well, and I was telling you earlier that I watched, I got the season 10 of The Simpsons, which is one of my favorite shows, and there is a episode where Mark Hamill appears, and we've played clips on it before here on the Forcecast before, but he was actually on there for the commentary that they did, and I just have to give them a plug. One of the great things about The Simpsons DVD is there
they
is
need a plug, man, on well, the Forcecast.
They do. Because there's one person who hasn't seen The Simpsons on
right.
this. But
send checks, too.
Right. But their DVDs, they do commentary on every single episode, and it's multiple people. It's usually at least...
Every episode?
Every single episode, it's usually at least one cast member, one voice actor, usually the showrunner, the show director, and one of the writers. Hmm. You know, and they do it, and even Matt Groening, and they've had Conan O'Brien, and they get everybody. Well, in this episode where Mark Hamill appeared, he... was on there for the commentary.
And this was the takeoff of the movie The Bodyguard, where Homer ends up being Mark Hamill's bodyguard, and
he's the mayor's bodyguard.
The mayor's bodyguard.
He rescues Mark Hamill from a horde of nerds that are trying to beat him up at the Bi-Mon Sci-Fi Con. It's a great episode if you haven't seen it.
Convention ever.
It is very funny, and there's some great comic book guy moments, man. And everything. But anyway, he said something when they originally pitched the episode to him. He said he didn't really want to do it because he was appearing at a convention and he, quote, doesn't do that. He only does that if he has something new. Hmm. And I thought, you know, I understand that a little bit, but on the same token, I kind of just wish I could convey to some of these people.
Here's something new. 35,000 people want to see you.
Right. You are part of something so much bigger. And you probably have kind of kept yourself away from it because you get annoyed at people, you know, assign that to you. But, you know, take that lesson from Doug Bradley and say, I'm going to embrace that a little bit. And, you know, again, all we would have wanted for him at Celebration 4, and we didn't get to see him at Celebration Europe. And,
right.
and I'm glad he did that because
yes.
that
right.
that's a big step. But
yeah, props to him for being there.
Was him being on stage for an hour. And
yeah.
people would have been falling all over themselves to try and get there.
Yeah.
So,
do I need to tell my Patrick Stewart story again.
Please regale us with that anecdote, just in case.
I was at a different convention, and I know how that's going to be greeted by. But Patrick Stewart, and we're talking probably, I mean, this is before X-Men. I mean, still Star Trek The Next Generation was on. But the man gave darn near a two-hour talk. This was in Cleveland, Ohio. Gave a two-hour talk. By request, he did some Shakespeare, whatever they do, I was a theater major, I should know that, but, clips from the, some Shakespeare plays that he had done before at the Royal Shakespeare Company. And after he did that, he signed autographs for about another 3 or 4 hours. No charge.
Amazing.
No charge.
And that's so amazing to me.
And I went through and didn't have like a glossy photo. Mm-hmm. All I had was because I was just a kid, I had the Xerox program that they gave you,
mm-hmm.
and went through, and he spent, a minute or two with me and shook my hand and was interested in what I had to say and was just as gracious as you could possibly be.
Well, and that, flies completely in the face of some of the stuff that I saw this weekend, where Sybil Danning, who hasn't been in a movie for 20 years.
Who they are.
She's a horror actress. She was in something. I can't even remember what it was. But she hasn't been in a movie for 20 years, with the exception of being in one of the pretend trailers that was in Grindhouse. And she was signing. She was $25 to sign your own items. And it went up from there.
Something I already bought?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I've already paid you for this for all intents and purposes. So.
Man, the Lost in Space guy at least signed your items that you already bought for free. Now, he would sell you, items.
Well, and everybody there, I mean, the cheapest there was $10.
Yeah.
And there were people there that were not of notable thing. But I will say this, for Doug Bradley, he took his time with everybody. He really enjoyed being there. And that's the model by which I would hope people would follow.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a dark side to all of this too, and we've heard stories from other celebrities that have had not so great experiences with fans. And I think that it's by far the in the minority, I don't know. I guess getting back to our topic here about Frank Oz, I just didn't care of the way he just completely discounted it. Don't do him, won't do him, been asked to do him, sorry.
Right.
At least let me down gently. it's like, oh, so Frank, is that a no then?
Right, we're Star Wars fans. We cling to hope, so just give us some.
The other question was, when you've been asked to do a particular voice during an interview or on a talk show, especially Yoda, you always decline. And this I respect. He says, there are a lot of reasons. Certainly when I'm promoting a movie like this or any R-rated movie, I won't do it because I don't want people to think it's a kid's movie. You know, you're just turning on the radio, you hear Frank Oz doing, we'll go take the kids to see this. And I don't want to be a trained monkey, he says. It's like talking to a plumber and saying, hey, while you're here, can you fix my sink? I love the characters, but I don't want to treat them cavalierly and just kind of toss them off when anyone asks me. Totally respect that.
That is certainly respectable.
Right. Like, when I'm in a crowd, at the mall, they want me to do my George Lucas. I say, do you know who I am? And no, thank you very much.
Yes.
But
myself at Toys R Us, somebody tells me to get out of the aisle while I'm doing my Billy Dee Williams.
Let's see. Your name has been attached to the new Clone Wars animated TV series as Yoda's voice. Are you, in fact, a part of that? Because I remember you weren't a part of the original series. He says, I know nothing about that. I haven't seen George for about a year. I could call him and find out, but I know nothing about it. Don't believe the internet. Well, if you check the listing on IMDb, he is credited as being the voice of Yoda, but we didn't hear his voice in the trailer.
Hmm.
And memory serves that in the teaser trailer for Revenge of the Sith, that wasn't no James Earl Jones either.
That's true.
So I'm saying there's a chance. I don't know. But Frank did talk with our own Jimmy Mack right before Celebration 4, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
Literally, like a couple days before. And here are just a couple of clips from that conversation.
What do you think of the Star Wars fans you meet who are everywhere?
I don't have... I mean, I'm pleased that they like my work, and I'm pleased I like Star Wars. I'm not... it was... George... And I have a terrific relationship, and we had it was like a family for so many years. But when you do it every 5 years or so, it's not, it's something you think about. So I don't think about it very much. I'm just glad it's there. I know it's a lousy answer, but I really don't think about it very much.
It's a job for you.
No, it's not more. No, nothing's a job for me. Whatever I do with passion. But I just don't think about it very much. I'm not a big Star Wars geek. I just love working with George, and I love doing my character. But I'm not really somebody who celebrates Star Wars certain times. I just love seeing the movies, and I love doing my character.
Well, it's not like a holiday or something. Like, although May the 4th be with you.
Yes, sir.
But he also commented to Jimmy about the Clone Wars.
Are you involved in the upcoming Clone Wars animated television show?
I never heard about it at all. This is the first I've heard about it, so I guess not.
Yeah, they have. There is a show. It's set to debut, I believe, next year.
Yeah, I don't know a thing about it.
Well, there you go.
Doesn't know a thing about it. Really?
See, I could buy that. If you're not going to do conventions, if you're not paying attention to it.
There was that huge media blitz. It was, of course, months after the Force.net and StarWars.com and, the other fan sites and whatnot talked about the Clone Wars, and we knew about it for a long time. But remember that time where on our, Google News, it was coming up all the time? George Lucas says, Clone Wars animated series, Clone Wars animated series. I mean, really? Didn't know about it at all?
Come on. I don't know what to say to that. But.
Come on. I don't buy it. What you're selling, I ain't buying, Frank. But I do love your character. And it's, if you have a question or a comment, please get in the queue to call in. You can call in if you're just listening. You can call 724-444-7444. TalkCast ID is 46670. And you can participate in the ForceCast live by going to TalkShoe.com. We do the show live Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. At least that's the time now. When we start competing with American Idol, I don't know what's going to happen.
We'll be doing the show at 3 a.m.
Here's what I suggest. Best way to watch American Idol. On mute, but listening to the ForceCast. And it's the Wednesday results show. You tape it, fast forward to the very end, when Seacrest goes, when he announces who's out.
I was just thinking, how ridiculous is it to listen to a singing show, a singing competition show, on mute?
Well, if you're listening to the ForceCast, it's fantastic.
Exactly.
All
right.
What are you talking about? Let's see. Ooh, Saga Legends. Is Dan Curto on? Do we have Dan? I don't think we do. You know what? He's done his bid for King.
I was going to say, he's not allowed to come back on, according to anybody.
Especially his wife.
Yeah, especially his wife. Look, I've had patience with you, for crying out loud.
Well, if you were following the Saga Legends poll round one over at rebelscum.com in the forums, the round two has begun. And what we're looking for now is the top 5 to 6 figures that will round out this particular line. They'll be coming out on March 2008. So over the past week, that list, basically members were just posting their five.
Mm-hmm.
There are five picks, and poor Dan went through and counted them all up, which I'm sure was not a lot of fun. Here's the rundown from round one. The Space Trooper, number one. Number two, Ifant Mon, which Dan called that. Three, Commander Neo. Shadow Stormtrooper. Really? Shadow Stormtrooper?
It was hard to get.
Zev Seneska. Pablo Jill. I need Pablo Jill.
Oh,
by golly.
One I have that you don't.
But see, I'm a card. I'm on, this doesn't do anything for me, really, because I'm a on card collector. So I need the first card he came out on.
Well, Well, I can do something for you.
You have
wink.
Him. Boink. Cool. Stormtrooper, VOTC, and believe it or not,
it's outrageous. It's unthinkable.
C.O. Bibble, number 8. Queen Amidala's advisor from Naboo. Let's see. Coleman Trebor. Han Solo, VOTC. Covert Ops Clone Troop. Now, he's cool looking. That one went by me. From repaint from Revenge of the Sith. Did you ever get that?
I did. Or no, wait. I don't know. I might have gotten one of them. It was a special order, so.
Well, was it?
Yes.
Huh.
Well, there's some holes. I think I'm
it was a
my
Star
collection.
Wars shop exclusive. If I don't, if I'm remembering correctly, okay. It was exclusive with somebody. I don't know.
All right, well, maybe somebody will chime in here. I don't know, Nate the Great, or Danny, or Nazi, or Jedi 1138. Come on, guys, give us a little love here.
We're tired of talking.
That's ridiculous. This is a talk show for crying
right.
out loud.
Graxel Kelvin, who's, you know, the guy from Phantom Menace, he's a senator. He looks kind of like a praying mantis to me.
Oh.
Well, no, not the praying mantis. Praying mantis is the cantina alien, but this guy looks like his cousin. Dirge, he came with the Swoop Rider. TIE Fighter pilot Zutton. Blue Snaggletooth. Darth Sidious Holograph.
Now that's one I didn't have. That's where my vote went.
Did it?
Yes.
I have him. I think I might be able to hook you up with that one. I think all I might
right.
have more than one. We'll do a little trade action here. or, you know, take your doubles to the Oswalk.
There you go.
Summer social coming up this weekend. We'll be there. Utapau Shadow Clone Trooper. As Natalie Portman called it. Remember that on Saturday Night Live? She goes,
mm-hmm.
What the pow?
Yeah, it was kind of sexy that she
it
knew was what
adorable. It was adorable.
Anyway.
Speaking of Padme Amidala, from as she looked on the Lars Homestead, Midriff included, Queen Amidala Battle. And again, this is another hard to find figure from episode one. Clone Trooper Republic Gunship Pilot, Apu Rancisis. What a great figure. Great figure. Princess Leia VOTC, R2. R9, the ARC Trooper, Commander Bly with the correct deco. So head on over to RebelScum.com and place your votes.
And I have an update.
For you collectors, you do.
At this point.
Oh.
The top vote getters to this point, to this very minute. As the show is recorded live. Number one, Commander Neo with 16% of the votes. Number two, your favorite Shadow Stormtrooper, 9.3%. Number three, Space Trooper with 6.3%. Number four, Zev Zeneca with 5.8%. Effont Mon with 5.3%. And then it is pretty close from there on out. There's a lot with 4 point whatever.
Who is number one again?
Number one is Commander Neo.
Troopers.
Well, that was a tough one to get because the only way you could get it was in the Battle of Silicomai.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
With the speeder. So, again, you need to get him on a car just for you.
That's right. That's right. So there you go. There's a Saga Legends poll.
That is the update of the poll.
We'll hopefully next week we'll have Dan Kurdawan who can tell us where things sit. How long is this going to be up? Do we know? How long this round?
3-4 years.
I love when we put each other on the spot. It's great. I love it. Okay. Here's something I want to throw out to the folks that are listening live. In a perfect world, what is your ideal Star Wars room setup?
Money being no object.
Money being no object. Because I'll tell you mine. I was looking at the Star Wars blog, the great blog. You can see it, starwarsblog.wordpress.com. Fabulous work being done over there. It's very entertaining. It's very different from starwars.com, mm-hmm. I find.
Yes.
As the Suck Lord pointed out on the microcast. But there is a company, let's see, who's this, Belgian playing card manufacturer, Cartamundi, which actually sounds like one of the cantina aliens.
Yeah, I think he's like seventh in the Saga Legends poll.
Cartamundi. Anyway, it's Latin for Cards of the World. They recently acquired a Star Wars license to produce playing cards and this poker chip set. Now, they've got some funky lighting on here, I'm thinking, but does this not look bad to the bone?
It set looks of totally poker chips? Cool.
And, the dealer, it's the you get, let's see, what do you get? 100 blue, 50 green, 50 red. They're 10.2 gram translucent chips. They're illuminated. No, here it is.
Yeah.
Illuminated by the case. 72 LEDs shining through, diffusing the light. I mean, it's very, very, well, it's to resemble lightsaber blades, so... that's pretty cool. It's going to set you back $200, but dang, again, if this isn't cool.
Money being no object, that is a excellent part of your Star Wars room, which I was interested to hear, and I think the fans would be interested to hear that as well.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the in my mind, my ideal Star Wars room is combination of like retro Vegas
and Star Wars. So like the poker chip set would go perfectly. So I want like a poster of Sinatra and a poster of, you know, Han Solo.
Yes.
You know, the two rogues. So that's my theme. And I'm working on it. We'll see what happens.
I've always been jealous of the one I saw on the internet not too long ago. Actually, it was quite some time ago at this point. But it was he had his movie room, his video room was the bridge of the Star Destroyer, where the screen was in front, and then he had you know, bays on either side.
One of those eccentric rich guys.
Yeah.
Speaking of eccentric rich guys, I was listening to another well-known talk show host, national.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm not going to say any names because I don't want to put ideas in our young, impressionable listeners' heads. But anyway, he had Joey Fatone on. Mm-hmm. Joey Fatone from NSYNC, and he's got some lip-syncing show. Or
yeah, he's the host of the Singing Bee.
The Singing Bee, okay.
It's ridiculous.
Came across as a very nice guy in the interview, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
So they're asking him about all the crazy money he was making during the NSYNC days, and what did he do with it? And he said, well, I'm a bit of a geek, and I did two things. I bought a Knight Rider car. I bought a kit, a real kit. He goes, but, you know, it wasn't crazy expensive. He said it was one that they used for, like, long-range shots. But he drives it around, and he says he can't bring himself to turn on the, you know, the red thing in the front. Right. But the other thing he did is he built a Star Wars theater. And he didn't get into the specifics as to what this thing looked like or what made it Star Wars-y, but he said he spent a lot of money on it, and he's kind of embarrassed by it now, but I think we need to try to get him on the Forcecast.
Yeah, I think that's something that he needs to share with the Forcecast listeners.
I think so, too. Well, those are your top stories. We got a little bit of indie news coming your way.
This is the Forcecast. Contact Jason and Pete now. Leave a message or MP3 with your Star Wars tales, comments, and questions.
Hearing my Star Wars tale on the podcast last Friday really made my day. And considering that I just recently found out about getting recommended for Navy Officer Cannon School, OCS, for surface warfare, but being on this Forcecast happened to be more exciting for me than my future career. I guess being such a Star Wars fan and hearing my voice on the Forcecast really made me feel like part of something larger.
The Forcecast, better than a job promotion.
Email the Forcecast crew, podcasts@theforce.net. Leave a voicemail, 330-871-4TFN. Using Skype, look us up. Forcecast, all one word. It's the weekly Forcecast.
We got some indie news for you. This is probably one of the biggest stories of the week.
Yeah.
As far as the Forcecast is concerned, since we've decided to cover indie because, well, no one else is. I don't know. There might be some Indiana Jones podcasts out there. I don't know. I don't listen to other podcasts. I'm kidding.
You listen to a lot of podcasts.
But I just thought that would sound kind of like pretentious and snotty.
Yes, yeah, very good.
Reminds me of someone.
Well, you know, played.
But anyway, indie news, how about the title? You know, there was a video, I think it was on the family video, where
it was on IndianaJones.com.
Yeah, over at IndianaJones.com, and there's a great little behind-the-scenes video, and I think it was Spielberg that said, well, we're here on the set of Indiana Jones and the, you know, kind of a thing. But mum is still the word on the title of this film, and I would guess, we'd have to go back and look, but I think by the time that episode 3, and probably 2 and 1 for that matter, were evolved to this point, you know, in the production process, we had the titles. I believe so. I mean,
probably,
we're less than a year out from release date on this, and it would have been a natural thing to release at Comic-Con.
Well, and kind of go through the titles, and then we'll talk about it a little bit.
Well, we'll talk about the titles here. What are the titles? Let's see. According to the Motion Picture Association of America, and they have a title registration report, there were 6 different titles registered for Indy 4. Now, how we know this, I don't know, but it's one of those things. It was a leak, And here's what we've got going on. Indiana Jones and the City of Gods. Indiana Jones and the Destroyer of Worlds. Indiana Jones and the Fourth Corner of the Earth. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Indiana Jones and the Lost City of Gold. And Indiana Jones and the Quest for the Covenant. So,
I heard the seventh title, which was not approved. You know, this was the last one to hit the floor, was Indiana Jones and the Quest to Find the Floor of Pete's Attic. What? Because it's covering toys and crap.
Well,
that was that's his greatest adventure, but unfortunately not fit for a full feature film. But anyway, looking at this, you know, not all of these titles all fit the same film, the same plot line.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can't force it on this. So I'm pretty sure they've narrowed it to a few, but they've just changed it just to throw people off a little bit or...
Well, City of Gods has been the one that
we've heard several times.
Exactly. But nonetheless, I mean, it could be any of these. I mean, I think we could probably rule out Quest for the Covenant. Because
yeah.
It's too...
That just sounds too Raiders of the Lost.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Obviously, Lost City of Gold, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and City of the Gods all are kind of in the same genre. You could maybe even say it for Fourth Corner of the Earth. Destroyer of Worlds, I guess it kind of depends on what object they're going after.
Yeah, I don't know. It just doesn't have, like, Temple of Doom.
No.
The Last Crusade. Raiders of the Lost Ark. None of these just... The one that really stands out to me is City of Gods.
Yeah, and
Destroyer of Worlds sounds a little extreme, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
All of a sudden, Indiana Jones runs into the Death Star? I don't think so.
Right, right. Yeah, right. Exactly. That's what it kind of reminds me of. I don't know, apocalyptic. I don't think that's where they're going. I mean, I watched Raiders of the Lost Ark the other night, by the way. Not that I had never seen it, but it's the one that I had seen least.
Right.
And I know Jay Shepard, he's going to be upset about this, but I really feel it's the weakest one. I really do.
I can't agree with you on that. After the Temple of Doom,
the ending is such a letdown. It ends very abruptly. I mean, it has all this great buildup. And then they get to, you know, when they're opening the ark and they all melt, it happens very fast. The effects look really dated now, which I know that's not you can't use that as a criticism. That's an unfair criticism.
Right.
Say, oh, the effects look dated. I hate when people say that, you know, and, you know, Mark Hamill's hair looks dated in Star Wars. It does. No matter how bad of hair they give Hayden Christensen in episode 3, it's not going to change the fact that Mark's hair in, you know, episode 4, feathered hair, you know, didn't look good. So
right.
Throw that argument out. Forget I said that. But it's just like, boom, it's over. And then they show Indy sitting there at the table with the guys from the government and Marcus. And, well, where's the Ark now? And, oh, it's in this building. And they show it. And then, boom, the credits come up. It just seemed more abrupt than I remember it. And I know that Last Crusade has some flaws, Temple of Doom has some flaws. But still, I think it's a little more exciting to me. I mean, it's got the whole, I love the beginning. I love the thing in the casino. I think that's really cool. What, you don't like the casino thing?
No, I if you compare openings...
I'm not going tit for tat.
Right.
I'm not saying, you know, the opening
was
better than...
Fine, fine.
No, nothing. No. Here, I'm going to give my
boulder scene.
No. The whole opening, I mean, the reveal, you don't even see Indy. You just see his coat and, you know, you see these shots of, you know, from the kind of like the middle of his back down. You see the hit, you know, the
shadows.
The shadows, right. And then finally he steps into the light. Oh, genius. It's brilliant. I'm really more or less talking about the end. I think the plot line of Raiders is beautiful. Great. I just think the end seems a little rushed. That's all I'm saying.
I could see that.
Yeah. But getting back to these titles, let's see. None of them. If I had to vote for one, I'd say City of Gods.
Yeah.
And the City of Gods. City of the Gods sounds a little bit better.
Right.
But
I have to say, you know, nothing of them really jumps out at me, and especially since the last title was The Last Crusade.
All right, but imagine if we were seeing a list like this for Episode 2, and it was Star Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Clones. Star Wars Episode 2, The Clones Attack. Star Wars Episode 2, Clones, Clones, and More Clones.
Clone-a-palooza.
But I don't know if we would have said Attack of the Clones. You know, I mean, it sent Ewan McGregor on the floor laughing, remember?
Yeah, well, and several other people as well, but...
But it works.
It does work. It you know, it fits right in with the timeline of what's going on, and everybody knows exactly what you're talking about, so...
Right. Right. I mean, looking back, I really have no problem with it. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the deal is with this. I'm hoping that within the next couple months we should get it. We do have a clip of... this video that we're talking about that was on IndianaJones.com, reuniting the family, it was called. Here's George Lucas talking about getting everybody back together.
It's always fun, you know, just to be on that set, because it does stop time, and you just sort of think back to the last time you were there, standing there, and it's like time stands still.
So there you have it from the creator, who really created the character of Indiana Jones, George Lucas. I believe the story was that he thought about the character on the beach while recovering from shooting Star Wars. He kind of dreamed up this story of this archaeologist. that's the lore.
I just think about the things that I think of on the beach, and none of them compare to Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I'm not thinking up, you know,
right,
billion-dollar franchises when I'm thinking, on vacation.
Check out that crab.
That's it. Indiana Jones 4 update. More next week.
Must contact me.
Play back the entire message.
What message?
Message after the message.
The Emperor commands you to make contact with him.
It's a trick. Send no reply.
All right, this is the debate that just won't die, is it?
Oh,
the debate,
well,
about Leia's mother.
There's no answer, so that's never going to kill it.
Okay, all right, Pete, why don't you run down some of the responses that we've received since last week.
We had a lot of people that chimed in, and here's kind of the highlights of the responses that we've gotten so far. Eleonora said that Luke was born first, so Leia could not have been the one that touched by Padme, and she gives a good explanation as to why that was happening, and I'll have to go back and watch the films before I actually cite it, but she says definitely Luke was born first. That was the baby that was touched. That explanation is out the window. Scott from Minnesota said, "I am not just an apologist," which
referring to you, not Scott.
Yes, Pete. Pete is not an apologist, which makes me happy to no end. You know, he basically totally buys into my explanation of it. Is these are four sensitive kids. They, you know, their mother, you know, all the imagery, all the things that come up, those are things that definitely could have happened. And that's the imagery that you could have. I mean, and just to go off and again, as humans, we have that phenomenon that they call the thing that I can't remember. What do they call that?
What?
When you feel like you've been somewhere before.
Deja vu.
Yeah, thank you. I totally was drawing a blank. We have that before. So those memories could be deja vu. And Rob chimes in with this tidbit that I didn't remember, but he said in Timothy Zahn's third trilogy or third book of the Thrawn trilogy, he mentions Leia communicating with her soon to be born twins. Only one of the twins responded, but one did indeed respond. So that's a possibility of something that could have happened. And Bill from Ohio also says,
wait. Padme's not Force-sensitive.
You don't think she is, but she might be.
All right.
Leia doesn't know she's Force-sensitive until she's like 45 years old. So,
first of all, that's a slight exaggeration. Second of all, you are the ultimate apologist.
I am the supreme.
Now Padme is Force-sensitive. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Well, not necessarily that she's
Force-sensitive. It's not like an STD. Force-sensitivity, my friend. It's... You know, I mean, it's not transmitted that way. It's not mono.
It's possible that the powerful beings in the universe do have that Force sensitivity. Maybe not as defined as a Jedi, but still something that they can tap into. So who knows? It's a possibility. But that's what Rob throws out there. I thought that was a good explanation.
I was making out with Hayden Christensen, and I caught myself.
Hey, if I can get force sensitivity, maybe I'm going to do it. That's just ridiculous. All right. Anyway, moving on. Bill from Ohio said that Leia may not have died. There was a long time before there was actual confirmation of her death, and maybe it was just a fake funeral. Maybe, you know, and I'm just kind of elaborating here, but maybe she was she pretended to die just to make sure that she was hidden from Anakin. I think the way that episode 3 ends up, that kind of there's no way that really can be possible, but anything is possible with retcon and the ultimate apologist, Pete Nadel.
What was the one that Dustin loved?
This was the one that Dustin loved. Thomas from Australia pointed out that in Hasbro's Twins packs that came out at the end of the Revenge of the Sith, Luke's eyes are closed, Leia's eyes are open. That ends the debate right there. Leia actually saw her as an infant, and Luke did not. So
Hasbro gets the final word on this whole thing?
Well,
actually, I think that's fitting.
It is kind of fitting.
Let's declare Hasbro the ultimate tiebreaker
authority.
They're the decider.
I don't think we necessarily want to do that. I mean, obviously, the biggest problem with it is, like you said, there was the explanations that were given in Revenge of the Sith left a lot of open questions. And it'll take retcon to go back and decide the story for once and for all. And it may never happen. There may never be a story that absolutely says this is what happened, because George will say,
that was really hard when I was writing it.
She died, and Leia, she just remembered something. And that'll be it. That'll be the explanation.
Well, if you were listening to the show last week, we went to a couple of different sources. We went to the annotated screenplays where George is commenting on the scene with Leia and Luke on Endor, talking about, how he's basically decided or has maintained that Leia does remember the mother, although that was a difficult decision creatively for George to make. And then in the novelization, the Return of the Jedi novelization, they go into, she has these memories and these visions of being stuffed in a trunk with her mother and hiding, and all very cool, compelling stuff that we never saw. So anyway, we don't want to rehash the same arguments. You can listen to last week's show.
But we do appreciate everybody chiming in with their opinion, and it just goes to show that there is a lot of different ideas out there on what actually did happen.
Pete, we got an email from Nick, Nicholas Gazin, and from Brooklyn!
Well, you didn't take the breath. But anyway.
Oh. Brooklyn! There.
Yes.
I think that's how it's spelled, actually. But anyway, he wanted to know, he's not a fan of the prequels, or at least he doesn't seem like he is.
I would say that not a fan is a complete understatement. Well, in fact, he says, they make me mad. I find them personally offensive.
Well, there you go. Sounds like the guy from the Force Among Us documentary.
Yeah,
actually.
Well, yeah.
Shipping next week, by the way.
I can't wait, although right. I've seen it already.
You
can't wait to have my own copy.
Right, right. Very cool. Anyway, so getting back to Nicholas's email, he said, what does he say here? Basically, he just wanted to know, he said, I've been wondering if you guys have any opinion about the prequels besides blind support. I'm a little, what do you blind support? When have we ever just given Lucasfilm and anything Star Wars just blind support?
We usually
flip a coin before the show, and I say, I'll be the one that's against, you're the one that's for. It's all very contrived. But he says, my love of the original trilogy is fierce. Watching them makes all my anxiety slip away. I know the feeling. I feel that way, too. I can forgive things in the original trilogy, like the Ewoks, because I remember thinking that the Ewok village was really fun when I was little. The prequels make me mad. He says, they hurt my feelings. They hurt my feelings. Have you heard the new Patton Oswalt comedy CD? That's the guy from King of Queens, the short guy. I can say that because I'm short too. He does a thing about going back in time to kill George Lucas before making the prequels. Now that's
a little
really
extreme.
Funny. I mean, I obviously it's in jest, but
I don't even really think it's fun to joke about killing people, to be honest.
Oh, you prude.
Yeah, right. You call me old-fashioned. But, you know, the idea is, you know, you go and, you know, poor George isn't able to do the prequels. And I, for one, feel that it's better to have the prequels we have than to have not had the prequels at all.
I agree wholeheartedly with that.
Yes, there are holes. Yes, there are flaws. Yes, they make me wince at times. And they make me think about what could have been.
I think if I could choose one thing, is that the way that George decided to tell the story, that being starting with Anakin at 10, then moving forward to the beginning of the Clone Wars, then wrapping up with the end of the Clone Wars and the initial appearance of Darth Vader. I would choose to do the pacing a little bit different and the areas of storytelling. And what I'd like to would have liked to have seen happen is filling in the gaps with all of the media that's available to him. And we talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, if he wants to start with Anakin at 10, that's fine.
It would have made a heck of a novel.
It would have made a great novel. It would have made a great cartoon series. The Clone Wars would have made a great cartoon series. Even a lot of what was talked about in Revenge of the Sith would have made a great series. All of it, it's just
but
three
as you
movies
pointed out,
just are not enough time.
And you pointed it out beautifully. That wasn't even on the radar back in the early 90s when these started cooking.
No.
Yes, does it make sense now to say, well, I really want to tell the story about Anakin as a young boy, to do a animated series about Anakin as a young boy? Gosh, yes, does that make sense now?
Right.
Early 90s, not so much. But I think you're absolutely right. There's enough now. But, you know, you got to remember, when you watch some of the documentary footage about before Episode 1 came out, when he was writing it, and McCallum has said, you know, they really didn't know if this was going to be a success.
Right.
I think they felt confident that they were going to have a great opening weekend, but you know, they didn't know if they could sustain it. Clearly they did. And, you know, I think George was hell-bent on making these three films. I don't think it was like, you know, Episode 4, where if this makes money, I'll make these others.
Right.
But, you know, but
he was
going in there for
he was set to tell the story that it was. And, you know, again, it's one of those things where I wish that the one things that I wish, and I do love the prequels. I really enjoy the films. I don't think that they're that much off base. But one thing that I really wish that they would have done was just not be so constricted by three movies at 2 hours and 20 minutes that they tell the story the story suggests,
yeah, right?
Just like The Lord of the Rings. I mean, The Lord of the Rings proved that people will go and see a 3.5-hour movie.
We've got a call.
I'm very excited about
this
a call.
Great. You are on with the Force Cast. Who's this?
This is Jedi Schwa.
Jedi Schwa.
Oh, our good friend.
Welcome. Thank you.
Hey, guys.
Great to have you.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, it's great to be here. I'm glad I got to join in tonight.
Fantastic.
So, you know, I kind of have this feeling whenever people say that they're comparing movies that are in the past, whether they're sequels or even remakes, and to me, the movies they don't have to be the same movie. You know, you can still enjoy it. And while I did enjoy the original trilogy better than the prequels, I still enjoyed the prequels. You know, I had a good time with them, and I don't think it had to ruin the entire series for me.
Right.
The way some people said.
I agree, and I think one of the problems is that because there was so much time that elapsed between Return of the Jedi and Phantom Menace, all of us fans from the early days, we kind of created our own prequels in our minds and with our toys. And so when the films came out and they didn't show us what we thought it should be or would be, I think that's where some of the disappointment came through. And also, I think that we're a little more schooled and cultured as far as storytelling goes. I mean, thanks to George Lucas. So it's kind of the great irony in a way. That, you know, he taught us how to, how to look at these kinds of films, and then he releases these three that, while they're good, they, you know, possibly could have been better. Are you saying that you don't look at it as all one saga? You look at it in terms of individual films, and this film can't ruin the other films for you. Is that how it is?
Yeah, Well, that's your second point. I mean, the Phantom Menace ruined Revenge of the Sith for me, or it didn't ruin Empire Strikes Back for me. I liked Empire Strikes Back a lot better, but I can watch both movies and enjoy both movies. I had this debate a couple of years ago with some of my students when we thought when Willy Wonka came out, and how they're two completely different movies, and I can enjoy them both. You know, I mean, they're the same story, the same idea, but I can enjoy both of those just like I can enjoy all the Star Wars movies. Yeah, they're all one saga, just like, you know, a TV series is all one saga if you watch Lost or something like that. But that doesn't, you know, stop the fact that the middle of this season really sucked.
Right. One bad episode is not going to ruin the whole season for you, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Right.
So, you know, and I could see people's point of view, and when I was a kid, they were really important. The most important things to me is for the movies to come out and not be what I expected. I can see where people would be disappointed, but for me, it doesn't have to destroy those good memories. You know.
No, I think it's healthy to have these talks. It's fun. I mean, it's killing time between, you know, now and the release of the TV series, both of those. And I see. Here's the thing with me, Schwa, is that I can sit and look at it from the little, you know, 10-year-old boy in me that is just an absolute Star Wars fanboy, and then I can look at it from the, you know, 29-year-old man point of view that's seen a lot of different films since Star Wars, and it doesn't. I can criticize the films and look at them objectively, and still turn them on. To this day, I get goosebumps when I see the crawler for Episode One, Phantom Menace, because I remember exactly what that felt like after all those years to finally see that crawler.
Me too, exactly. It's the experience for me, you know. And to be honest with you, for me, it's even probably more the hype leading up to the movies that I enjoy more than the movies, probably, because it's just that feeling I get from the whole experience. So, and I think, you know, that's one of the reasons I enjoy the Celebration so much too. It's just that entire experience that the movies create. Mm-hmm. And when I was a little kid, it was playing with the toys and playing with my brother and pretending and make believe. But you know, with the prequels, it's the hype. So I completely agree with you guys.
Well, and there's a certain aspect to it too that, like you said before, it's better to have had them than to not have anything at all, because we got to see certain things that we had dreamed about but had never seen in any Star Wars portion before.
Right.
You know,
this part of the timeline was off limits.
Right. The incredible sword fight, the lightsaber duel between Darth Maul, Qui-Gon Jinn, and Obi-Wan Kenobi. We'd never seen anything as fast and as well choreographed as that. We had never gotten to see Yoda actually use a lightsaber or fight.
Right.
We had never gotten to see, you know, some of the evolution of, you know, Darth Sidious moving from just a senator into acquiring all his power. So there's things in there that we take for granted because they're part of the story. But the fact that we never did get to see them, if we had never gotten to see them, it would have been a little, there would definitely been part of me that would have been wanting to have always seen those types of things.
Yeah. And we have to look at, you know, what we did see and what we did love. And there's, you know, 95.8% of it I loved. Jedi Schwa, thank you, my friend. We appreciate it. Appreciate you being here.
Appreciate it.
All right, we've got another. Okay, take care. We've got another call here. You are on with the Forcecast. Who is this? You're on with the Forcecast.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, who is this?
Hey.
This sounds like, is this Mr. Roney? Hey, Jeff, how are you?
It is Mr. Roney.
Mr. Roney to me. Well, we're just doing our little show here.
Yeah, I think I'm too old to be on the show. But anyway, I remember the good old days before CGI and that kind of thing. I don't know. I think the prequels were rushed. We kept hearing that everything was all planned out. I didn't feel that way. There were huge plot holes that were never filled in. The acting for the prequels cannot match the acting. The brilliant lines, the fun repartee between, you know, Harrison Ford and everybody else in the original films. I don't know.
All right. Well, we got another
different films, but
well, let me ask you, Jeff. I mean, without giving up too much, how old were you when you first saw Star Wars Episode IV?
I think it was 12, 14, around there.
Okay. And so by the time Episode I, The Phantom Menace, came out, you were significantly older. I mean...
Yeah.
No, just significantly older, not significantly old.
Right. But, I mean, let me ask you this. I mean, and I know that you kind of, you take pride in the fact that you're a fan from the old school days. Do you think it was your age, or do you think you're just, hey, I'm objectively looking at these films and they just don't hold up?
Well, a couple of things. The way I felt was that Star Wars was Dark Star and Silent Running, and maybe 2001 when Star Wars came out in 77. And to me, it was a prestigious thing. It was like, I found this. You know, and this wasn't Star Trek. This was something different. And so I guess with the prequels, it was so much hype. I was just like amongst millions of other people that kind of jumped on the bandwagon. So, you know, perhaps that's why I cling to the original films, you know. But I think you can watch 4, 5, and 6, and it's so different, but it's so great. I mean, I love the fast-paced dialogue. Just the funny little off references rolling in the eyes. It's just great.
You know, you're absolutely right, Jeff, because I never watched the original three, particularly Empire and Jedi, where I think the actors are really getting into the characters. But there's great moments in Episode IV, don't get me wrong, but there's something about, and I think it was the Kirshner effect in Empire. I never watch those movies without laughing out loud at the same moments. They're great. So I think you're still there. Yeah.
The prequels almost seemed too serious. I understand that Episode I had to kind of introduce everything, but I don't know. I love when Han Solo put his finger up to stop C-3PO from talking. You never had any of that fun stuff. You never had the fun Yoda. You never had any of that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I love 4, 5, and 6. I always will.
I hear you. It's hard to disagree with that when you're looking for humor, when you're looking for, snappy dialogue. It's hard to disagree. We got other folks that are waiting. But Jeff, while we have you on the line, we talked about it at the top of the show. Tell us about the end of Tatooine TV. You're going to be doing a live show for this, right?
Yes, we're doing a live show the 19th. 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and that's at swtalk.jrdonline.com. We're going to cap it off, Lloyd. The first, from what I understand, series, Star Wars parody series. And, 36 episodes. I like a number of them in the early days, but as we started hitting our stride in 30 and beyond, I think we did some of the greatest, funniest, best stuff we've ever done. And I hope everybody. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say you're a pioneer in Star Wars fan audio, and we really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Jeff. Take care. We'll talk to you soon. All right, you are on the Forcecast. Who's this?
Hey guys, this is Danny.
Hey, Danny, welcome back.
I would say I'm an old school kind of guy also. I was lucky enough to go to see the 6th film in the theaters. I would say that for the classic trilogy, I was as impressed with the visuals as I was impressed recently by the visuals of the prequel. But as for the acting, it never caught up with the classic trilogy, and it was missing some things. Like you mentioned, I think from my point of view, the Phantom Menace wasn't really necessary, maybe except to show how Palpatine got into power. And as for the rest, I would have made like Attack of the Clone, a movie about the Clone Wars, and like Revenge of the Sith, you know?
Yeah, we've mentioned that here too. I mean, if had George started with Episode 2, and then had the second episode could have been a Clone Wars story, and then the third could have been the fall of Vader and the wiping out of the Jedi and the things of this nature. Then you would have had, perhaps a better story. It's great to hear all the different points of view, you know, because Mr. Roney, as I call him, he made a good point. I mean, you're talking, Danny, about the acting, and it's a great mystery to me because you have fantastic actors in this film. I mean, clearly C.O. Bibble.
I know.
Oliver Ford Davies he's a Shakespearean, master.
I know, maybe it's the direction, or I don't know.
I mean, it could be. It could be. Your point is well taken. We've got some other callers. Danny, can't thank you enough. Really appreciate you taking the time out to be with the show.
No problem.
All right.
Okay, you're on with the Forcecast. Who's this?
Hey, this is Nathan, 19 Nazi from the forums. How are you guys doing? This is
Nazi. It's a little...
A little what?
It sounds just like it's a little loud. Are you talking on a headset or?
Okay, is that better?
It's a little better, yeah. Yeah, that's better. Yeah.
Okay. I just turned my mic down, sorry.
Okay.
I wanted to point out with like the original trilogy and how big it was. And like when you come to something like the prequel trilogy later on and how high the expectations are and how you're almost never gonna meet them. Like, as George Lucas, he almost had no chance of meeting the expectations of the fans.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that the expectations were so high because we had all these years to dream and pretend and play and develop the stories kind of in our own minds. I mean, when you look at Episode 4 and you're watching that and you hear Obi-Wan say, Andy was a good friend, and he gets that look on his face that, of course, only Alec Guinness could do. You started making up the story in your head, and in some cases, it didn't deliver.
Yeah, actually, and kind of something like just recently, because I'm a big Harry Potter fan as well, and so when you come into that seventh book, you just have so many expectations, and for me, it just kind of didn't deliver. And so, growing up with it. You have so much going into it, and you want everything to turn out what you like, but it's just not going to happen. But still, you just have to enjoy them as they come.
Well, you're absolutely right. Although I got to say, for those of you that are that are Harry Potter fans, I think J.K. Rowling wrote one amazingly tight story over seven books.
Oh, absolutely.
Exceptionally tight, and. There are other creative folks that should be taking a lesson from her, I think. I think she was extraordinary for that whole series. So, hey, man, thanks so much for calling in. Appreciate it. Make sure you next week. Thank you so much. We've got another caller here. I think I know this one. You're on with the Forcecast. Who's this?
Hey, this is Nate.
Hey, Nate, how are you?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Doing just fine. Do you want to weigh in on this argument? We're talking about the prequels and how they match up to the original and, this never-ending discussion, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, great debate. Like you were talking about, in the original trilogy, you see the acting that, it just doesn't show through as much, I think, in the prequel trilogy. You talked about Sir Al Guinness, and I watched this movie, Bridge on the River Kwai. Oh man, that was a good one, seeing him acting. And you just don't, it doesn't seem like you see that nowadays.
No, I mean, Are you saying that the quality of the actors was higher in the original films?
Yes, very much so.
Okay.
No, they had,
all right.
Like you said, they had that sheen to them.
Yeah, well, there was definitely, you know, when the casting came out for episode one, when we announced the casting, you know, and you saw Ewan McGregor, who at that time, let's remember, was very much an unknown. Natalie Portman had not done much. If they had Liam Neeson, and it seemed very natural, okay, Liam Neeson, he's going to be the Alec Guinness type character. Like you said, they have that sheen to them. They have that star quality to them. Neeson did that in the first film. Like Alec Guinness did, kind of like Peter Cushing did, lent some credibility to the film. Christopher Lee in episode two kind of filled that void. So I think you still had some pretty good actors, but do you think that it was a chemistry thing? You just didn't have necessarily the right combination?
No, not necessarily. It's just, I just think that the actors, it seemed like, I don't know, it just seems like a nostalgia thing, maybe, to me. I don't know.
Well, that's interesting. I would say that I disagree. I think that the caliber of actors in the prequels is great. I mean, keep in mind, of course, we're judging, you know, the talent of Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher and Billy Dee and you know, all these folks in Guinness, not so much Guinness because he had a long career before, but we're kind of judging them after the fact, what they've done afterwards. So it might be a tough comparison to make, but there's also I always get the sense that the commitment kind of faded away much more quickly for some of the prequels as opposed to the original trilogy, where they still had the sets, they still had the interaction there,
mm-hmm.
and then just from the comments of Liam Neeson and Ewan McGregor, and just about how disappointed they were about how much green screen there was and that type of thing, I think that may have made it a little bit more difficult to
sometimes wonder if it caused them to kind of throw up their hands.
Yeah, I wonder a little bit.
And they were just cashing the checks.
Yeah, I don't know. It's Nate, hey, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll see you. Thanks, Nate. We got another caller here on the line. You're on with the Forcecast. Who's this?
Hey, it's Chris Mott from The Force Among Us. How are you guys?
Chris Mott from The Force Among Us. Fine. I saw
how you guys doing?
We're doing great, man. How are you?
Not too bad, man.
I know that you've got some strong opinions about this. We've talked about this before.
Yes, I know. Well, first of all, I got to say, there's a couple points to make. If everybody's been following the interviews with Mark Hamill and Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher, they had problems with the dialogue, too. So I don't think the dialogue is any different in the prequels versus the old movies. I mean, as far as the actors go, the prequels have far more superior actors. You know, Ian McDiarmid, Sam Jackson, Ewan McGregor, Liam Neeson, Christopher Lee. The list goes on and on. I'm going to get stoned for, people are going to throw rocks at me for this one, but I think what went wrong was not only the hype, 17 years is a very, very long waiting time, but I think George Lucas, of course, turned the directing role over to Kirsch in episode two. And I mean, not in episode two, but in Empire Strikes Back. And then Richard Marquand for Return of the Jedi. So I think George's directing, maybe he's a very laid back guy, you know? And I think, you know, directing, you have to really be on edge. So the stories are great. I think the concept of the stories are great. The characters are great. I just think if anybody's saying that the acting is dry or the films are a little bland, I wouldn't blame it on the actors or the story for that matter. I just think, you know, it would have been awesome if Kirsch directed those movies, you know?
I agree. I think Kirschner directing Revenge of the Sith would have been just a fanboy dream come true. Even at this stage in his life and his career, I can't think of anybody better. Honestly, now my head's spinning thinking about the possibility. But you know, it's interesting, Chris, what you point out that the actors you know, in the prequels are probably of better stock than the original trilogy in the pyramid, and the list goes on. But I kind of liken it to this idea of chemistry. I mean, you can have really, really smart people in a room, but they, you know, but combined, they can't come up with any good ideas because the chemistry's not right. And I sometimes wonder if it wasn't just that, you know, Lucas got lightning in a bottle. I mean, he really did. We have no evidence at all to suggest that the casting process for the prequels was anything like the casting of the original trilogy, where he was specifically looking for three actors that would light up the screen together. And so, I mean, maybe it goes further to your point that it was George, but maybe it was back at the beginning with the casting.
Yeah, and I think too, you know, when I remember Ewan McGregor talking to Dennis Lawson, I read it somewhere, and Dennis Lawson, you know, told him, he said, you know, when you get into these movies, you're going to pretty much sign away your privacy. And I think too, the new Star Wars movies for the actors, I mean, that was a big thing, you know? I mean, it's almost like George was repeating the past, you know? And you know what they say, you can't repeat the past. So I think, right, you know, the actors being involved, I mean, the actors had some pretty big shoes to fill, even though, of course, the, you know, they were new movies. It was, you know, the fan base is so big and so strong, and it's like, you know, to bring something back from 17 years ago, I don't think that was an easy task. And I love all the prequels, you know, just as much as I do the old ones, but I think on a different wavelength, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I love them, but in a different way. I mean, there are times where I'm looking at, you know, I'm in the mood to watch a Star Wars movie, and I walk over to the cabinet, there's a shelf, and I sit there and I think, well, what kind of a mood am I in? What am I in the mood for? And it's not like I default to the original trilogy all the time. I don't. There are a lot of times I say, I mean, I've pulled out Phantom Menace many, many times, and I kind of want to watch that. And for me, it's sort of reliving the excitement and the hype, you know, like we had, I think it was it Jenny Schwab that mentioned that about the hype, that was the, you know, part of the fun and the excitement and reliving that. And sometimes I grab Revenge of the Sith or I throw it on my iPod so I can watch it while I'm, you know, sitting at my desk at work. I mean, Episode 2.
I think that's the thing about the movies, you know. I think, you know, the old movies are totally different from the new movies, but I think it's the diversity that's really cool about it, and it depends on what kind of mood you're in. And I think the prequels, of course, have this very, I always call them like a renaissance era for Star Wars, because, you know, it was definitely before the dark times, if you will, for Episode 1, and things were a little bit more political in those days. There was no need for scoundrels running around and businessmen in City in the Clouds hanging around, because it wasn't that kind of story, you know, from before A New Hope.
Right. I think you're dead on that the story, in a lot of ways, in the time, you know, the setting for the films dictated a lot of that. You didn't have, like you said, you didn't have the need so much for scoundrels, because at that time it was almost kind of utopian. You get the impression that when you know, this deal with the Trade Federation at the top of Episode 1 just totally throws the Senate for a complete loop. They have no idea how to deal with this. As if there's never been problems. That's right.
I mean, yeah, you could say the people, you know, the Newt and Roon from the Trade Federation. I mean, those were the scoundrels back then, but they were the political scoundrels, if you will. They weren't like the street smart guys. You know, it was a different time in the Star Wars storyline.
Yeah, Valorum was kind of a political scoundrel. You know, that guy was on the take. I think he was on the take by Trade Federation. I think he was just powerless. Hey, Chris, thank you very much for joining us tonight. And, hey, since you took the time, why don't you plug The Force Among Us?
Well, actually, I think that's why I have to go right now, because I'm getting the labels ready for 700 DVDs that we're shipping out tomorrow. So couldn't awesome. Be a better time to plug the film right now. So everybody's going to get their DVDs the first of next week. And, again, thanks again for pre-ordering the DVDs.
Hey, well, thank you, man, for all your hard work, and thanks for being on the show. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks a lot, man. Love the show, and keep up the good work. We'll talk to you soon, guys.
Okay, take care, bud.
All right, later.
All right, well, that, to me, kind of sounds like it. My, what a show.
That was a great show.
This was great. Very
spirited debates and great news.
Yeah. You know, now I think, like, well, maybe Jeff's right. And I'm like, oh, maybe Chris is right. I'm all wishy-washy.
Yes, exactly.
It's because I love him so much. Like, it's hard for me to, you know, have my opinions.
Yep.
But I'm sure we'll get several more opinions this week, so right. Keep them coming. We love it. We'll talk about it next week on the show. It'll just be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Good feeling my lines.
Hey, we want to thank everyone that listens live this week on TalkShoe.com. I want to thank Jeff Roney, who kind of gave us the idea. Thank Chris Mock again. It was Chris's show, really, The Force Among Us Live, which was kind of the inspiration behind it all. I also want to thank some of the folks at TalkShoe.com that I've been emailing back and forth. They've been very cooperative. Great group of folks. Thank you to Dustin Roberts, Jay Shepard, Dan Curto, Jimmy Mack, the Suck Lord. Make sure you listen to those microcasts. They were fantastic. Thank you, Pete, for putting up with all the changes. And I spilled my McDonald's orange drink all over you tonight. And you're sitting there with wet pants. Wet, sticky pants.
Well, and I get up later and I'm still sticky. I'll think of you, which is just terrible.
All right. On that note, we better go, but we'll let you know that if you want to listen live, go to TalkShoe.com, do a search for ForceCast, write us a review. That would be great. But don't worry. Stay subscribed to iTunes. The regular ForceCast will come at you every Friday for Listen on Demand. But we do record the show live Wednesday night, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. No invitation required. Just go to TalkShoe.com, and you get all the details. Also, our forums at RebelScum.com. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, how do
you
do it?
Well, you can call us at 330-8714-TFN, or if you have Skype, you can username us at ForceCast. Again, username ForceCast. And, of course, you can always send us an email at podcast@theforce.net.
Force.net.
We do always read them, and we apologize if we haven't gotten back to you. It's been amazing how the email volume has grown over the last
10
to 12 months or so.
Well, yeah, I mean, since the beginning. But
almost a year.
Almost a year. Maybe you guys should let us know what we should do for our big year show, which is coming up really soon, actually.
Yeah, it's like in 2 weeks.
Around the corner.
It's almost too late to plan anything really cool.
Right. Anyway, we'll give it some thought. Love you guys. Thanks so much for joining in and taking time out of your lives to be with us. For the ForceCast, I'm Jason.
And I'm Pete.
And remember,
Force will be with you always.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, and any other Star Wars franchises, are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of the Force.net LLC, unless otherwise.